So Jacob and Esau, the rest of the story. And this is unfortunately often the forgotten part of the story. I should point out what has happened between last week's reading and Jacob heading back home. A number of chapters of Genesis that are not in the lectionary, but I didn't want to spend all summer on Jacob's story, although I could. Jacob's one of my favorites. But here's what has happened in the meantime. Jacob flees, goes to his uncle Laban, his mother Rebekah's brother. And I would remind you, this is Rebekah who was the one who came up with the idea of how to con Isaac to the blessing. This sort of thing runs in the family. Jacob goes to stay with his uncle Laban, works with the herds, and falls in love with Laban's younger daughter, Rachel. Laban says, "Work for me 7 years, and I will give you Rachel in marriage." Jacob agrees. The wedding day comes. The ceremony occurs. Of course, the bride's been veiled this whole time. Oops, lift the veil. It's Leah, the older daughter. And as Laban says as his excuse, "Well, we just don't do that around here, marrying off the younger daughter first." Jacob says, "I'm still in love with Rachel." Laban says, "Well, just work for me 7 more years. And Jacob agrees. Now, at some point as well, Laban says to Jacob, "What do you want me to give you for the work you're doing?" And Jacob says, "How about this? From now on, any new animal that's born, if it's speckled, it belongs to me. If it's white, it's yours." Laban says, "Sounds good." And immediately takes all the speckled animals from the flocks, gives them to his other sons. But Jacob discovers a trick as well, that when the animals are mating, if he puts a piece of a limb with some of the bark stripped off it in front of them as they're mating, their offspring will be speckled. So whenever the stronger animals are mating, Jacob puts the stick in front of them, and the offspring, strong and vibrant, are speckled. The weak animals he doesn't do that with. And so gradually the herd increases, at least the speckled animals increase and get stronger, and Laban's part of the flock gets weaker and smaller. Ah, families. Eventually, Jacob hears rumblings from Laban's sons and decides it's time to go. And that's essentially what brings us to this moment. Jacob is now fleeing from Laban and heading right back from the frying pan into the fire, back to Esau. And it's a great, I think, moment. Jacob is terrified. He sent a messenger ahead to Esau, you know, to soften him up, and gets that great word back. "Hey, your brother Esau's coming out to meet you." Oh, and he's bringing 400 soldiers with him. And Jacob thinks, "I might finally be in trouble." But to Jacob's credit, he prays. Beyond all that Jacob does, one thing is true of Jacob. He trusts God. And so he prays to God, God who has already promised him offspring and a long life. And he says to God, "You've promised me these things. I will trust in you. Of course, I'm also going to figure out what I might be able to do to help my odds as well." So he divides his camp. He sends groups of animals as gifts ahead of him, and then spends the night alone before crossing the river Jabbok. And I should point out as well, in the middle of what I read and what Rodney read is the great story of Jacob wrestling with God. That is in the lectionary. But it's worth noting that's what happens. And so Jacob, you might remember, limping the next morning, goes to meet Esau. Now remember, we've left Esau 20-some years earlier, furious, spewing fire and vitriol and vowing to kill Jacob if he ever sees him again. Again, to Jacob's credit, he goes out in front of the women and children, bows 7 times, and waits. That must have taken a fair amount of courage and faith, especially as Esau comes running towards him. And then, of course, like the father of the prodigal son, Esau comes, arms outstretched, to embrace his brother and kiss him, and they weep. They're reconciled. Jacob says to his brother, "In you I see the face of God." And sure, he's a con man, but maybe he means it. And to Esau's credit, this is Esau's great moment. He forgives his brother and says, essentially, "You are my brother. I'm not sure I see the face of God in you." He doesn't go quite that far, but he says, "You're my brother." And they're reconciled. They come together. Now, I don't think they're best pals or anything. The next thing that happens is they go their separate ways, and they will not actually come back together until Isaac's death. But they have reconciled. It's an important end to this story that could have ended up the way the story of Cain and Abel does. But it doesn't. Maybe because there's some time involved. Maybe because Esau and Jacob are able to rise above unfairness and hatred and recognize that they are both children of God and both brothers. And maybe even recognizing some of what Rose was talking about. Love means ultimately you stick with it. All of which seems to me a pretty important lesson these days. I mean, we are entering what I think we all fear may be one of the most divisive election seasons ever. There seems division all over the place these days. Not just Democrat and Republican, but, you know, pick your various groups: black, white, young, old, rich, poor, Israeli, Palestinian, Arab, Jew, Sunni, Shia. But if Esau and Jacob can come back together, I mean, who would have predicted that, given where we left them last week? Jacob fleeing for his life, having stolen a blessing, Esau vowing to kill him. But somehow they come back together, see each other as brothers, see the face of God in each other. We may not like each other, but we are kin, family. That gives me hope that maybe even Democrats and Republicans might be able to recognize fellow human beings and brothers and sisters. That maybe Israelis and Palestinians, and young and old, and rich and poor, and all the divisions that we're so good at making, maybe we could all learn a little lesson here. I mean, if Esau, big, dumb Esau, can figure out to forgive, I'm projecting there a little bit, as I said last week, can figure out, "I need to forgive this brother of mine." And if conning, clever, sneaky, smarmy Jacob can have the humility and courage to say, "In you, brother, I see the face of God," maybe there's hope for us. I've got to hold on to that hope. And I invite you this week, the next 100 days or so, to keep in mind Jacob and Esau. Because if these two guys can forgive and be humble and recognize each other as brothers and come back together, certainly we can. With God's help. Amen.